Hello, and welcome to Breast Cancer Conversations, a podcast brought to you by survivingbreastcancer.org. I'm Laura Carfing, breast cancer survivor and founder of survivingbreastcancer.org, a nonprofit organization providing community, education, and resources to empower those diagnosed with breast cancer and their caregivers from day one and beyond. Hello, hello, my friends, and welcome to another episode of Breast Cancer Conversations. I am so glad you are here today because I get the honor of interviewing Lauren Lopriore. Lauren is a mother of two, wife, and breast cancer survivor. As a full-time mom, she manages Live and Let in the Give Shop. Today, we talk about her diagnosis, and we dive into the deep and personal conversations around pregnancy after being diagnosed with breast cancer. I truly appreciate Lauren being so vulnerable and sharing her personal experience, because I know so many of us out there in the world of breast cancer have these burning questions about, oh my gosh, I have breast cancer, but I want to start a family. How do I do this? What options do I have? And is this even possible? Today, we give hope to all of those questions and concerns. Lauren, thank you for being here. Welcome to the conversation. Lauren, welcome to Breast Cancer Conversations, a podcast where we talk about all things breast cancer. And as my listeners know, I keep things incredibly conversational. I did not send you questions in advance, and that is definitely intentional as well, because we just like to talk about our experience being diagnosed with breast cancer, regardless of stage and subtype. We're really just a community to provide education, community, and resources for those who are unfortunately going through this diagnosis. And so despite the breast cancer circumstances, it's really nice to have you on the podcast and to meet you. So thanks for taking some time today to share.
Hi, Laura. Well, thank you so much for having me today. I'm so grateful to be here, and I look forward to having a great conversation with you today.
Yeah. And have we like crossed paths before with like April Stearns and Wildfire, or I don't know. I just feel like your name keeps popping up in like breast cancer entrepreneurial circles of women, these amazing women that are just like in our tribe.
Yeah, most likely. I do think, yeah, through April's kind of group of entrepreneurs, we probably have crossed paths. I do believe we got to meet very quickly at the Young Survivor Coalition last year. So, but yeah, there's always different avenues of meeting new folks. And so, but yes, I do think kind of an initial meeting could have been, through a connection with April. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Are you going to the Young Survival Coalition conference again this year? I think it's in Vegas.
It is in Vegas. Yeah, I will unfortunately not be there this year, but hopefully in the next year or so, I'll be able to get back there.
Yeah, no, I agree. We're not going either. I got to like pick my conferences strategically, right? And so it's like, where the resources, how much time do I want to take off from the day job and travel? But there's such a great energy when we can meet our fellow sisters in person, because I think even since COVID, just being able to meet virtually, and then we're like, oh my gosh, I feel like I know you because we've like experienced all of this together over the last couple of years, to like hug in person and have that tangible experience with people. So
no, absolutely.
That's great. And where are you calling in from today?
I am calling in from just north of Chicago, in a town called Wilmette. So yeah, just about 20 minutes north of Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's dive right in. If you would like to maybe like introduce yourself and a little bit about your experience with breast cancer when you were diagnosed, how you found out that you had breast cancer, and the type of like characteristics your cancer had, if it was ER positive, triple negative, lobular, et cetera.
Sure, absolutely. So Lauren Lopriore, was born and raised west of Chicago, moved to New York after college, and and was there for 7 years, and moved back to the Chicagoland area, and was continuing practicing yoga and Pilates, and really kind of taking care of my body. At least that's what I thought I was doing. And came home one day after a yoga practice, and I felt a lump under my right arm and also on my right breast. And I was like, well, this is strange, but I thought, well, I just pulled something. Like, there's, I just didn't even go there right away. I just kind of blamed it on, yoga and the movement. And, but it hurt and it moved. And I was kind of like, okay, but then, you know, you go Google and it's like, it's not supposed to move and, you know, and it shouldn't hurt. So, but in the back of my head, I knew that my grandmother had breast cancer. And so there was that little part of me that said, okay, it could be, but as we all kind of nope, not me. There's like, no way. I'm 29 years old. There's, you know, it can't be. So, but you know, I just was like, you know, I should just go get it checked out. It was bothersome. I kept touching and it just, continued to, bring anxiety, to my days. And so I went in, I ended up seeing the nurse practitioner, and my gynecologist, and she, as a lot of times we hear, oh, you're so young. I just really don't think it's, anything to be concerned about, but I'll put an order in for, an ultrasound. And, you know, almost 10 years ago, you know, I was working, I was about ready to, go to my first Super Bowl in Arizona. And I'm like, okay, like I'll get it done, you know, but there was not a lot of urgency put behind it. And again, my mind was not really thinking that this was going to be something. And so, but the end of December, the nurse called and she said, you know, we just see you haven't gone to, your ultrasound yet. And I said, well, no, I haven't, but I just took it as this, okay, some they're calling me, like I need to make it. So I wasn't able to get in until the following, like end of February of the next year. Mm-hmm. And I went in for the ultrasound, and when the, ultrasound tech left and brought the doctor in, I looked and I said, I'm assuming this probably isn't good. And she just kind of looked at me with like, almost like a deer in headlights. And I was like, okay. So I then proceeded to have my first mammogram and three biopsies. And pretty much given that day, I was pretty much told that I had breast cancer. Yeah. So not until the day after was I called by an oncologist, triple positive. So, HER2 positive, and, stage 3. And then later on, I would find out, that I would have, that I would be positive for the BRCA gene. So, yeah, so, you know, so I knew that there was some family history, but, not, the family history that I would soon find out, that I would be in the oncologist room for the first time. And, my mom and aunt and husband, were with me. And when the oncologist said, oh, do you have any family history? And I said, well, my grandmother had breast cancer. And my aunt, who was sitting there, said, well, I'm a breast cancer survivor as well.
Oh, wow.
And so that was a pure like shock of like, oh, okay, well, that was news to me. And so, you know, kind of from there, it was really important for me to then kind of dive in and understand a little bit more about my family history. So
yeah. Let me stop you right there. Thank you for sharing that. And sure. I know it could also be like really triggering to go back in your mind to like think through that like moment of, you know, I felt something. Is it urgent? Is it not urgent? Being told, if there wasn't a sense of urgency from your primary, right? And you're like, okay, well, at least I got the script to go get the ultrasound. But it's not like they were like, oh, go upstairs right now and get it done, right?
Right.
So there wasn't. Yeah, it's very hard to like discern how we should be taking those actions. And so I wanted to ask you, when you felt this lump and had some pain and then we're going in for your ultrasound, did you share any of this with anyone else at the time that you were going through this? Or did you kind of like keep it more close to the vest of like, okay, I'm not going to panic yet. We don't have all the information.
Yeah. So great question. So at that time I was married. So, my husband knew, and you know, the one time that my husband says, I'm going to go with you to your appointment. No, you had a work, you know, he had a work commitment. Nope. You go do that. you know, I wanted him to be there with me so badly. And he quickly came after, you know, I called. But yeah, so other than my husband, my parents knew, my sister knew, but I didn't really announce it too much to anybody.
Yeah.
And I think it was really because that appointment to me was like, oh, I'm just going in and almost kind of going to be told nothing's, you know, it's nothing. So,
sure.
So for me, it was just like a routine appointment that, I would be going on. And let me tell you, you know, going into this appointment, I sat in the waiting room looking around and I was like, oh my gosh, where am I? Because I was by far by 30 years, like the youngest
yes.
person in the room. And so, yeah, you know, but then, you know, soon after that, family and friends all were yeah. informed of what I had just found out. So
exactly. And yeah, I think that's actually for anyone listening too, you know, I think not just finding breast cancer conversations once you've been diagnosed, but if you're in that waiting phase, or if you're like trying to discover and find information on, you know, what does a lump actually feel like? Or
right.
how do I know? Not all breast cancers present with a lump, but I always use the analogy of like, if you touch the cartilage of the tip of your nose, like it kind of feels like that, or sometimes like on your elbow, like
oh, yeah.
a little like pea size thing. Right. So mm-hmm. it's just like, and I too am triple positive, or ended up finding out that I was triple positive,
mm-hmm.
and also had a lump under my arm. And it was so interesting because when I brought it up at the age of 32, I actually thought it was, they assumed it was like an ingrown hair. And
oh,
so
sure.
for years, I was like, it's just always been there. Like I would notice it and it was just always there. Right. And I remember my boyfriend, who's now my husband at the time, was like, what is this? I'm like, no one's concerned. Like that just, I know my body, quote unquote, right?
Right.
That's just what my body does. But then it wasn't until my breast actually started showing dimpling and some changes I was noticing. And I was like, actually, this doesn't look right. And so mm-hmm. advocating when I was 34 then for the mammogram and ultrasound, and very similar story. I was like, I'm just going to go in and rule this out. No right. need to come with me. But when they squeezed me in for the biopsy during the doctor's lunch break is when I called my husband and was like, can you please come? Like, I'm a little nervous now. Like, this isn't going well. So,
right.
Yeah.
You know, when they fit you in and squeeze you in, mm-hmm. that there's more of an urgency to it, because, you know, I just yeah. had ultrasound and then I started like going to different rooms, and then,
exactly.
you know, it was, I mean, I don't really recall what time of night it was, but I mean, it was like 8-9 o'clock at night and I'm sitting having a biopsy. So,
right.
You yeah. know, so you know, at that point. That, yeah.
And I agree too. So like when we think about like, who do we tell, who do we bring into our world when we're like
right.
dealing with all of this, can be really hard as well. So obviously the husband knew. And then I ended up calling my mom because, again, being under 40, I've never had a mammogram before. So I was just like,
right.
you know, I feel like this is like a mother-daughter moment. Like, mom, I just want to let you know
uh-huh.
that like this thing is happening and I'm just going to get checked out. And so like that way, in the event that obviously it ended up being breast cancer, but in the event
right.
it became breast cancer, it wouldn't be so shocking to my mom
sure.
to like hear the news. And it's so interesting. We always say like, and I was going to commend you too for like even knowing that your grandmother had breast cancer, because so many people don't even know their family history. It's not something we talk freely about, especially in previous generations
right.
where it was like, oh, so-and-so was sick, or they weren't feeling well, or they have to take a lot of rest, you know?
Right.
But not really understanding why. And it isn't until we start, you know, doing some of the genetic testing or disclosing that we have cancer. And then
right.
they come out of the woodwork of like, oh yes, on this side and that side. And like all of a sudden everyone has cancer. I'm like, this would have been really helpful to know
yeah.
early on.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And I think my grandmother was really young. So I actually grew up with her. And so she passed when I was 15. So, you know, I experienced her loss of hair, going to chemo.
Okay.
You know, I went with my mom for her to pick out a wig. And so it was, you know, real to me at that time, but nobody really like explained what was happening. It was just, you know, grandma's sick and she's going to go through some treatment and then she'll be better. And, you know, and it was interesting because that time frame when I was 15, I did not realize that it was actually breast cancer that had metastasized from first being diagnosed like 20 years prior.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And so it actually was informed to me that, you know, she actually had cancer in the bone, but not actually mentioned, you know, that it was from the breast cancer prior to, right. You know, I think we don't necessarily talk about, you know, how breast cancer happens in different forms and different stages, and then reoccurrence happens, and, you know, and it can come back in different parts of the body. And so I think just, you know, having a better understanding of, you know, kind of now what my grandmother had, and, you know, she passed, in her early 60s. So, you know, so she had been diagnosed really early too, at 46, and my aunt at 48. So we, you know, we all had been diagnosed at an earlier age than what most people think.
So when you went through your genetic testing, to find out that you were a carrier, did you say for BRCA1 or BRCA2?
So BRCA2, it was like undefined as BRCA1. So, so I just kind of have moved forward in that, taking all precautions. Yeah.
And did your mom or aunt at the time also decide to do genetic testing?
No, they did not. I do have a sister though. She's 5 years younger, and she did choose to, and she also is a carrier. So, so, you know, so however you look at it, the, you know, however genetics are passed down, you know, the fact that my sister and I were both positive, you know, good chance that it, you know, falls from the family tree. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, genetics are just one part of that whole puzzle of why we get diagnosed with breast cancer in the first place, right? I think it's somewhere between 10, some places say 15, but like a small percentage is genetic. And so much of it too could be a whole bunch of other elements or the genetics that we haven't discovered yet, right? So I don't have a genetic predisposition, but part of me is just thinking like, well, we just haven't discovered that one gene yet because, you know, why, as at the time, a very healthy, strict vegan, worked out, did yoga just like yourself. And it's like, how is this happening to me? Like, are you kidding me? And I wasn't exposed to the world of cancer at all. Like, even understanding the difference between a lumpectomy or a mastectomy, or understanding, you know, when I got sick, I went to the doctor, they gave me medicine, I'd get better. Like, what all of a sudden is like, what do you mean? Like, so tell me what this is. So I can appreciate that. So thank you for like the diagnosis. We got up to that speed. Yeah. Then what happened? Did you end up having like chemotherapy, or what type of surgery did you end up opting for?
Yeah. So, I started with chemotherapy. Prior to that though, my husband and I were given the option to go through, fertility treatments. Having not had any kids and wanting to have a family, with kids. And so, so I did go through IVF and went through that whole process to, freeze my eggs, and then, started right away then with chemotherapy, and then went on to have a double mastectomy, following that, had radiation, and then, did have reconstruction as well.
And what was the time period between, you know, doing your IVF treatment and then when you could start chemotherapy?
So, it was a push. The oncologist was really wanting to start chemotherapy right away,
but as they are, absolutely.
Yeah. But she, allowed for me to start the IVF, pretty much like that next week after, kind of getting all of my treatment regimen. And, so, you know, being diagnosed on February 20th, I did IVF up until I think like the middle of March. And then like that last week of March, I started chemotherapy. So it was like a very quick, like turnaround of starting everything.
Yeah. I remember being offered the option for IVF as well. And I remember turning to my now husband at the time, because he was with me at these appointments, and was like, are you cool without kids? He's like, yep, I'm cool without kids. I was like, great. Well, I guess we'll start chemotherapy. And to that point, like, they wanted to get us in so quickly, right? It's like, you get diagnosed, you're triple positive, or if you're HER2 positive, normally you start with chemotherapy first.
Right.
They want to do a port placement, or just, you know, get you on track as quick as possible. And so to have that pause, and I think we just did it so nonchalantly. Like, we now have a dog and we're like dog family planning, but like, that's really the extent of it. But I'm curious, like, when you and your husband are deciding this, if you wouldn't mind sharing for our listeners and my own curiosity, like, yes, you want to be a mom, you want to family plan. Were you concerned at all about like the estrogen, or were you concerned at all about delaying chemotherapy, knowing that you did have cancer growing in your body? Like, how did that kind of weigh all of these decisions? And I know that's a really tough question, but
yeah,
like, how do we grapple with that? And there's no right answer for anyone listening and like exploring. Cause like, I was like, nope, not doing it. You're like, yep, totally doing it. So like, I think it's really good to share all sides of this.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, the truth is I was terrified. I mean, there was no sugarcoating any of this. I mean, I think I cried through the entire process of making this decision. They had to sit with a therapist and really she went through, you know, the ups and downs and all around, you know, risks and pros and cons. And you know, I think a lot of it was, I almost kind of went down a road that was, I knew I had breast cancer. I knew it was estrogen positive, but I didn't really focus on the estrogen part of it. It was me like so heartbroken that I like would not be able to conceive naturally. And I was kind of like, I'm going to do anything that I can to do it. And, but you know, but honestly, but the truth is like, you know, having to inject the shots and, you know, and inject more estrogen and all that, kind of crazy enough, I didn't get that time. I didn't really think about it. I think it was like, again, my mind went more to like, I want to be a mom so badly. Like, what can I do to do this? And then also knowing a little bit that like, okay, well, if I do this now and the chemo's coming right away, like then any other estrogen, like it'll go away. But like, you know, your mind just is like in so many different places and you're thinking about all these things that are coming up that, you know, was I truly thinking fully clearly? You know, I don't know, but, you know, I obviously had my husband supporting me and all the decisions we were making. But, you know, I don't know whether or not I would have said no. So I think it was just kind of whatever I had to do. And you know, I was scared. I mean, from the get-go. So, you know, and so, but I will say that, you know, there was a, you know, a day of conversation where the oncologist was just like, I just really don't know. I don't know if I really want you to go through at the IVF before. Like, it was just, you know, stage three. And so she just was really not sure. But I didn't really force it either. She just kind of eventually came back to me and said, you know, if you want to, I'm okay with the timing. So, you know,
and
but
it's your choice at the end, right? Like, yeah, you need to live with that decision and just not closing doors and having the options available to you, I think is wonderful. And if that's mentally helpful for us to get to this next phase, then we know that we're doing everything that we can. And then there's no regrets, right? As long as you can wake up the next morning and be like comfortable with those decisions, then those are the right decisions.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And like you said before, there's no right or wrong at the end. It's what you're comfortable and in that moment, you know, making that decision with, you know, with a significant other or not, with, you know, a friend or family member who's there to support you. And, you know, you just, you kind of go forward with what is best for you.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so fast forward, you are a mom.
I am a mom. Yes.
Of one daughter, if I recall, or how many?
So I have a daughter. I also have a 10-month-old little boy.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. So, but, you know, I am a mom and I'm grateful for it every day, but it didn't come without a lot of hurdles. So
absolutely. So if you don't mind me also like inquiring, so like fast forward past cancer, when did you start to decide that you wanted to conceive and move forward with family planning? And then also, I don't know if this, again, because of your desire to be a mom and all of these things, did the idea of being a BRCA carrier play a role in kind of that heaviness of passing on potentially a genetic mutation?
Yes. So from the genetic mutation aspect, yes, it was concerning, but it also kind of like, I was kind of at peace with it only because I had been through it. And if for some reason my child was BRCA positive, like I was going to be the one that openly communicated about my story and what I went through and what we can do to detect early and prevent. And so, you know, by no means was I wanting to have a child with BRCA to, you know, but if that's what happened, you know, I was ready to have that conversation and to mentally help them through it. But in regards to having them, so I was on tamoxifen after going through all of my treatment, and being on tamoxifen is, you know, not something that you want to be on in terms of getting pregnant. I was in conversations with my oncologist about what it would look like to get off of it for some time. I, you know, every patient survivor's experience is going to be different in their comfort level of getting off the medication, not, you know, and how long. I had already gone through my treatment. I already, you know, felt good about where I was at. I was on medication to, you know, what I was told to help with, you know, preventing any recurrence. And so my husband and I did a lot of talking about what it would look like to adopt, or, but we did freeze our embryos and, or use a surrogate. And so actually both of my children were born via surrogate. And, you know, we started kind of soon after I finished with my treatment, looking at different surrogacy agencies within the Chicagoland area. And, you know, we really kind of started our family planning process through finding an agency and being matched with a surrogate. And it really... cancer was hard and treatment was hard, but this was like right up there with it. And it was emotionally draining. There was a lot of grief. There was a lot of discomfort from, family and friends who didn't understand the process. We, you know, we had miscarriages, we had failed transfers, but that was how we chose and how we wanted to have our children. You know, we wanted to be able to have children with our frozen embryos. And, you know, we realized kind of after we had our daughter with a surrogate, we did try to have children after her through the same surrogate with other embryos that that did fail, and then so we didn't have embryos left, and so you know, I went through a lot of testing afterwards, a lot of blood work to see whether or not I could actually get more eggs. What would it look like at that time after being on the tamoxifen for, you know, 4 years, which, you know, brought a little more comfort. You know, what would that look like if I did carry? And, you know, again, every body is going to be different in how it is impacted by the treatment that it's been under. But for me, I was told there was no way I would ever be able to get any eggs. My ovaries were pretty much completely damaged by the chemotherapy. And then also as far as even just carrying, my uterine lining, you know, was not some, would never kind of be in a safe place for, you know, carrying.
And that's partially due because of the tamoxifen.
So really, altogether the chemotherapy.
Okay.
Yeah. And so, you know, and I knew that kind of going into having chemotherapy that, you know, that could be what it looked like down the road. So, you know, so we actually then, you know, this is probably is not shared too much, but we did actually, work with an egg donor. And so, you know, we created embryos with, you know, my husband and, and this, egg donor, and, you know, created embryos and worked with a different surrogate. So, you know, it was kind of, it's been a wild ride, but I have two beautiful kids. And if, you know, I look at it, if other embryos took, or, you know, if I carried, or, you know, I may not have the two children that I have now. And so we're truly blessed with, their names are Matilda and Milo, and they're just the best kids a mom could have. And, you know, and we, you know, we kind of joke about like, okay, are we going to do this again? And I'm like, no, I'm done with this process. But, you know, but we will always be open with them, and, you know, they're small enough where we haven't had that conversation yet, but they will always know about, you know, how they were brought into our family. And, you know, I will say that for me, it's been a process of overcoming the, you know, the egg donor and it not, you know, being mine, but I have to remind myself that I am their mom. And, you know, but it is something that, you know, the breast cancer, you know, it takes and it gives, and it just, it's, you know, I think we look at it as, you know, you go through treatment and, that's it. And there's you know, there's just so much more to it. You know, and we chose to have kids. And so we were ready to go through what we went through. You know, obviously that's not, for everyone, and that's okay too. Yeah. So, but we were mentally prepared for it, knowing, that if we wanted this next step in our lives, that that's, what we were gonna encounter.
Yeah. But Lauren, thank you so much for sharing that.
Yeah.
Honestly, like, beautiful story, right? Of how breast cancer, like, takes away so much from us, and it can ebb and flow, and when it's hitting us, in terms of the grief that you were mentioning as well. And you're mentioning also with your breast surgery, and we didn't really talk about breastfeeding, but, you know, again, just the options of like things that we aren't able to do that we might not necessarily think of in the moment when we're confronted with the words, you have cancer, but then how it manifests itself throughout one's life. And so I just think it's so beautiful that, you know, despite all of these circumstances, like, you and your heart knew that you wanted to be a mom, and you were able to find these amazing opportunities in order to, you know, have your family with your husband. And I'm so excited to like hear about Matilda and Milo. Like, it's just so beautiful. And thank I really appreciate you just being so vulnerable and opening up to our listeners, because we don't talk a lot about some of these more sensitive topics. And so I know that you're doing a tremendous service to our listeners and any woman out there who's, you know, newly diagnosed and considering, you know, should we freeze our eggs? Should I not? What about the fertility treatments? Is it even possible to have children? And what options are out there? So I really value that.
No, absolutely. Thank you.
So your life continues to be amazing. So not only are you a mom, you have started your own organization, Live and Let. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Excellent. And so tell me a little bit, and you just recently launched, because I'm on your mailing list, you recently launched your like library resources. So tell me how then you transitioned from taking this cancer experience to actually giving back to the community and starting your own business.
Yeah. So, you know, it was a couple years after completing treatment and I'd had my daughter and, you know, I just kind of had this feeling that, you know, I just feel like I need to do something. I want to do something. In that time frame, a few girlfriends had been diagnosed with breast cancer. You know, we were supportive of each other and providing care for each other. And, you know, I had done a lot of research on my own, kind of only being the only cancer person in my life, you know, kind of a young adult that, you know, really didn't know what to do next. So I did a lot of, you know, finding and researching on my own. And so really kind of wanted to share that with the girlfriends that had received a diagnosis and, you know, later on in the years would have family members mention, oh, friends or family, you know, being diagnosed with serious illnesses in addition to cancer. And so I really just wanted to be able to provide what I had found. And also it was really kind of like 2 years after it was kind of at that time I finally decided to seek out therapy. And I really just kind of from that, started writing too. And so kind of a combination of like wanting to share these resources with, those who would unfortunately, you know, receive a diagnosis. But also, you know, writing to share my story and, you know, everyone heals and everyone, feels differently with their diagnosis. But for me, I wanted to talk about it and I wanted to share what I had gone through and what I had learned. And so it really kind of became a blog at the beginning and, you know, shared kind of from the beginning, everything that, you know, I had experienced and went through. And, you know, then it really just kind of became a place where I could put those resources and create a community calendar of events and programs that were going on through organizations that I was starting to find. You know, I didn't feel like I knew of organizations at the time in 2015, you know, with community support and, but like, why shouldn't anybody else, you know? So I wanted to be able to provide like that space, that one space where, you know, somebody could go and say, you know, I need some financial assistance or I'm looking for a community and, you know, I don't really know where to go. And so, yeah, so I started, you know, Live and Let's resource library and really kind of putting all of the organizations from, you know, supporting patient experience to providing art therapy programs to mindfulness and yoga to, you know, in-person to virtual and wanting to make sure that people had access to that. And, you know, over the years have read books and listened to podcasts and, you know, everyone kind of learns and feels and educates themselves in a different way. So I wanted to be able to provide, you know, various resources, kind of all in one space.
That's amazing. You've like simplified the Google search for anyone who's been diagnosed.
yeah, that's my goal. Yes. So that people aren't going down the Google rabbit hole.
Yeah, no, exactly. So it's a wealth of information. And again, the way that you have it organized on your resource library, whether it's for financial assistance, for young adults, for, you know, if you're a mom dealing with like, you know, how do you tell your kids, et cetera, a lot of resources there. So
yeah,
we will definitely link to that in our show notes so our listeners can go find your website. And then in addition, you've also done the, what is it called? The Give Shop, GIV?
Yeah. So that kind of started, you know, kind of it's become Live and Let's sister company. And that really started with me curating care crates for friends and family and kind of via word of mouth, you know, people reaching out and wanted to be a resource for those who really just didn't know how to support their loved one or for themselves didn't really know kind of what to do next in regards to, you know, I'm going in to have surgery. Like, what are things that would be beneficial or provide comfort? I mean, I remember after having surgery, the doctors saying, oh, go buy this garment that you have to put over your head that you can't even put your arms through. And so it was kind of like, you know, I started finding these businesses that survivors had started. And I thought, well, you know, what a better way to bring all of these businesses into one place to provide survivors and caregivers, you know, a space where they can get the essentials for their treatment. And, you know, kind of,
I can't tell you how many like fuzzy socks I got in the mail. I'm like, okay, if someone sends me one more pair of fuzzy socks.
I know. And I hear you. And I, you know, I've been brought up as like, it's the thought that counts, but some of, you know, the things you're like, okay, well, you know, I appreciate it, but we're just going to put it to the side. But I received a really wonderful care package from my aunt, and it was this blanket that had pockets in it and two kind of like beanbag pillows that, I mean, I still have to this day. I still snuggle in my blanket. And it was just one of those where for me, it brought me comfort and it brought me just, you know, that I was being thought of. And not to say that these other gifts weren't, because they were, I very much felt thought of, but it was that one particular package that just really brought the shop to life in terms of what I wanted to do in creating these care packages and really making it this luxe experience of, you know, opening it up. And so kind of since I've been in survivorship, I've been learning a lot about, you know, what we put in our body, what we put on our body, how much that impacts our health. And so growing kind of the shop from this concierge service of, you know, kind of one-on-one putting together gifts to really making it a shop and in a place where, anyone can really go to curate a wellness gift or purchase wellness goods to, you know, enhance their self-care. And, you know, I think we all, cancer, not cancer, we all could use a little extra self-care and love. And so, you know, to really have a space where there's clean and good non-toxic products from, you know, nail care to skin care, hydration, and kind of so forth. And really, you know, interestingly enough, it's, you know, we get the fuzzy socks and hats and all that, but my nails were horrendous during chemo. And I can't tell you, I mean, how brown and how I lost one. And yeah, too, I know that's too much. But so, you know, for me, kind of one of the extra things of like adding to this shop is, you know, nail care and, you know, you know, helping with the brittleness and, you know, some colors to kind of spice up your day, and some, you know, bright lipsticks. And, you know, I think everyone kind of finds their own self-care and beauty in different ways. And so trying to provide different items that, you know, somebody can gift to a friend or a loved one. Or, you know, I had somebody shop and say, you know, I was just diagnosed and I went through my treatment and I deserve something. I deserve to, you know, treat myself with good products. And so it was like, I loved that. I loved that she did that for herself. And so, you know, we have, you know, partnered with some really wonderful businesses, women owned, survivor owned, or, you know, those who are experts in the field of care. And, you know, things that you put in your body, from like hydration powders and amazing herbal teas to, you know, things that you put on your body, you know, like amazing natural shampoos and conditioners and lots of skincare. But then also, you know, first and foremost of like how and why we got started, you know, pre-made and bundled care for chemotherapy, for breast surgery, for radiation, and really, you know, providing something that can bring a smile or really say, like, I'm thinking of you.
Absolutely. Beautiful. Yeah. And so what is your website officially, so people can find all of these great products?
Sure. So it's giveshop.com. So G-I-V, there's no E, S-H-O-P-P-E.com.
Excellent. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, Lauren, I appreciate all of the golden nuggets you've shared with us today, from your own diagnosis, being diagnosed so young, starting a family, the trials and tribulations that go into that, to your entrepreneurial endeavors of starting your own businesses. So, I mean, is there anything else we haven't covered that you need to share?
Nope. I think that's all for today.
Yeah. Well, I really appreciate this. I'm sure we'll have you back on the podcast to dive into more topics with us. Thanks for taking the time. Oh,
I would love to. Thanks so much, Laura. Appreciate it.
And thank you, everyone, for listening to our show. I would like to acknowledge that all of the information on our podcast are from personal experiences and are not a substitute for professional medical advice. You should always contact your medical care team. If you're looking for specific topics or would like to be a guest on our show, please feel free to reach out to me. My email is laura@survivingbreastcancer.org. Until next time, keep on thriving.